Support for Aspen Public Radio comes from Balcom & Green PC, a full-service law firm with offices in Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and Basalt, providing advice and solutions for their clients' legal needs throughout Western Colorado for more than 60 years. Learn more at balcomgreen.com.
Welcome to Valley Roundup. I'm Carolyn Sacriason. Now that an affiliate of the Aspen Skiing Company has closed the sale of IntraWest and Mammoth Resorts, many are waiting for the equivalent of Vail Resort's Epic Pass to be offered for the 16 ski areas we are now linked with.
They're all top-tier ski resorts. Now, you know, we're able to compete with that because you have Squaw Alpine, Mammoth, Steamboat, lots of great resorts as well that we're now affiliated with.
And leading up to the deal, which is worth billions of dollars, the Ski Co. had its sights set on a much smaller piece of the ski industry pie.
Aspen Skiing Company put in a bid, a cash bid, for Steamboat, the operations at Winter Park, and then the Heliski operation up in British Columbia. So that kind of tells us what Aspen Skiing Company, or what the Crowns, were specifically interested in.
Also, Colorado Division of Wildlife officials say that human carelessness is leading to more pregnant bears.
Bear mommies have delayed implantation, so they can carry a fertilized egg with them, and whether it actually implants in the womb and they carry it to term is determined by how much food they get.
In Carbondale, the town trustees have drafted an environmental bill of rights. Whether the move is symbolic or has real teeth has yet to be seen. Finally, a new school is opening in Glenwood Springs. Joining me this week are Scott Condon, reporter for the Aspen Times, and Curtis Wackley, editor of the Aspen Daily News, along with Randy Essex, editor and publisher of the Glenwood Post Independent. Thanks for joining me on the phone and in the studio.
Thanks for having us.
Good to be here.
Scott, you've written a lot of stories in the last week following the acquisition that the ski company has finalized with IntraWest and Mammoth Resorts, and the ski company is one of their top guys is moving over. And there's some, Curtis and I were just discussing what David Perry's actually going to be doing.
We had reported a few weeks ago that he'd be moving in the direction of the California resorts of Mammoth and Squaw Alpine, but your story this week made it sound like it'd be more overseeing the whole, mega ski co, as I'm calling it.
Yeah, the announcement from IntraWest talks about David Perry, who was the Aspen Skiing Company's chief operating officer, becoming the chief operating officer and president, which I think was significant, of this new, as of yet, unnamed ski conglomerate.
Mammoth Ski Co.
Mammoth Ski Co.
Yeah.
And,
Mega Mammoth.
And so I asked him, you know, what's your job description? And he said he would essentially be overseeing the operations from everything from food and beverage to retail to ski school and on mountain of all those 12 ski areas underneath that umbrella, which do not include the four of Aspen Skiing Company.
So,
and he said one of his first duties is he'll be working with the interim CEO, which is a guy out of KSL Capital Partners, which is an affiliate of that company and an affiliate of the Crown's companies, are the actual owners of this new Mammoth Ski Co. And, they're going to be fleshing out their senior executive staff, he said.
So how significant do you think this is? I mean, people care that much that David Perry is moving over to that position, or is it more, does it signify kind of what is going to happen in terms of Ski Co and this new company, operating all these different resorts? Not that we're going to feel a local impact?
I think the local impact is going to be not for this season, because they're already locked into various marketing agreements and just contracts with ski passes. So I don't think it's going to affect ski passes this year. But I think it could potentially have an impact on the following ski season. Like, I don't know, maybe there'll be some kind of ticket that if you're a Steamboat skier, you get a discounted lift ticket to Snowmass or something like that.
Good.
Yeah, surely there'll be some sort of reciprocity. I mean, you've got to think they're going to offer something along the lines of the Epic Pass, because that seems to be why you're doing this, right? So you can compete with that. So you have one pass that is good at all of those resorts. I'm sure they're still trying to crunch the numbers and figure out how that would work. The Epic Pass is a season pass to all of the Vail Resorts holdings, which, you know, every 2 weeks they add a couple, it seems like.
Scott, do you have a handle on that, what the comparison is?
With the Aspen Skiing Company and its affiliates, that would be 16 resorts, right? And
yeah.
The Epic Pass looks like 12.
So we're going to surpass.
Creek, Whistler Blackcomb, Breckenridge, Keystone, Park City, Heavenly, North Star, Kirkwood, Wilmot, Afton Alps. Isn't that your old stomping ground?
Yeah, it is. It is.
I mean, that
Mount Brighton and Perisher.
That pass is like $700, right? I mean, that's that really is a great deal. They're all top-tier ski resorts. Now, you know, we're able to compete with that because you have Squaw Alpine, Mammoth, Steamboat, you know, lots of great resorts as well that we're now affiliated with.
And that's, of course, the headline that I was talking to Randy Essex about. Sunlight is now partnering with a Japanese resort. So
Right. Whatever
that...
It's, you know, Sunlight and a lot of these, like, the gems or whatever, however we're referring, the marketing folks refer to them, there's always been partnerships there with these small independent resorts, but that seems to be expanding as well. You know, there's reciprocity now between Silverton and Sunlight, which is pretty cool.
And then, you know, I know when they first announced this, the acquisition of Mammoth and IntraWest, they were pretty hesitant to talk about passes, but I think we all know that that's where that's going.
Yeah.
But it's too early to do that for this season. And pass prices are coming out this month. Don't they usually come out mid-August?
Well, yeah, you got to buy them by mid-September.
Right.
Which is always...
Yeah. And just for the record, that Epic Pass, I think there was an early deadline, and I think now it's up. Now it is up to $859.
Okay. Thanks for clarifying.
So, it'll be interesting to see what Aspen Skiing Company and its affiliates do next year to compete with the Epic Pass. But yeah, Curtis, I think you're dead on. I mean, I don't think the Crown's made this move to, just sit back and let Vail keep on gritting and getting a bigger market share.
Right. Because if you're a skier in the Midwest and you want to spend a couple weeks out west skiing, it's pretty compelling.
Right. especially if you don't want to go to Snowmass every time.
Yeah.
You know, and your family wants to go somewhere else.
So I hope that they can offer something that is on the level of that. I think you'd think that would be good for the industry overall if you can, you know, make the prices, you know, carry a little better value.
Question is it going to do anything to the Aspen Skiing Company pass?
Right.
Will you be paying the same amount, but you have access to those other resorts then too?
Yeah. I mean, this is the big question in my mind here is what does this mean for the four resorts here and how they are operated? And there's a lot of unanswered questions there, I think.
They say nothing will happen, right, Scott?
They're going to look for areas of, you know, common interest that they can pursue the same path on. So I would think that they're going to be doing, you know, some marketing, but and some environmental. I think Auden Schindler will be working with their David Perry had said that this new ski conglomerate is going to be hiring a vice president of sustainability and energy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I suspect they'll be working with Auden and his staff. You know, Mike Kaplan's been pretty clear in his public speeches in the last couple of years of how technology needs to be boosted. And I think you're going to see, you know, I don't think it's as sexy as a shared ski pass and stuff like that we want to talk about, but I think behind the scenes they're going to be working on just really boosting their software and apps that skiers can use.
So we had a guest opinion about this that raised a little bit of concern and was something of a call to arms, perhaps. Just pointing out that, you know, here you have one of the top guys at the Aspen Skiing Company, well-respected figure in the industry, leaving ski company to go work for the Mega Mammoth Ski Co. And, you know, it's a concern that maybe there's going to be a little bit of brain drain. And as this company is affiliated with this new bigger company, does that mean some of our, you know, some of those jobs are going to migrate now to Denver, much as David Perry has? And that, you know, that could be a concern, right? If jobs in the sales and the the international PR, if that all gets consolidated, are we losing out there? And this is Peter Grenny, a local guy who works in kind of real estate and development, said, gosh, wouldn't it be great if this new company could keep part of its workforce here in the Valley? You know, this is kind of dance with the one that brought you kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which would be great, but I don't know if that's in the cards or not.
It was a pretty interesting point.
It sure doesn't look like it.
Yeah, right? I mean, but it was almost like a call to action that, hey, ski company or Mega Mammoth Ski Company, don't be headquartered in Denver. Be headquartered here or somewhere.
Well, he said, why don't you put 25% of your people down in Carbondale?
I think the important thing to remember is in the last kind of news release from InfraWest, when the sale was finalized, it talks about the Crown family are the minority owners, and KSL is the majority owner. KSL is a nationwide company with an office in Denver, and InfraWest, as I think your columnist had pointed out, was based in Denver. I don't know. I just don't see them saying, well, you know, let's take the existing administrative staff, support staff, and let's move some of them up. I just don't think that's going to happen. And, you know, the Aspen Skiing Company is a independent entity from this new sister organization. So, yeah, I think that's an interesting question of whether is there going to be any kind of a shift of responsibilities or shift of roles over to the bigger company. Mm-hmm. Seems like the Aspen Skiing Company's made a point of saying, you know, we can really focus on this. David Perry's going over to help run that, and that's a good thing because we can just keep plugging along and do what we're doing and get Snowmass up to snuff, et cetera.
I mean, you want those people. You want people who are engaged in the ski resort business to be located in a ski resort. That's one of the big knocks on Vail is that they're based in Broomfield.
Right.
So they're not, you know, they're not rubbing shoulders, you know, with the skiers in quite the same way as you would be if you're actually based at the base of the mountain.
That was Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen, and you're listening to Valley Roundup, an analysis and commentary of the week's news with writers and editors. We continue our conversation about the ski industry with Scott Condon, reporter for the Aspen Times. Scott, you wrote a story that I couldn't help but have undertones that you may know more than what you can write in your reporting about whether or not ski companies' buy-in binge is over when it comes to Sun Valley because of its presence there now with a new Limelight Hotel.
You know, as I think Mike Kaplan acknowledged, there that's been a long-held rumor, and whether it's just a rumor or not, he says no, there's no effort underway or there's no transaction being pursued right now. They did invest $70 million in a property in a Limelight Hotel for property acquisition and construction of the hotel. Did they have a bigger design? I don't know. You know, the steamboat rumor first came up in January, and I had posed that to Aspen Skiing Company officials more than once. And the answer is no until it's yes.
Right. Yeah. You know?
And so would I be surprised if they're pursuing Sun Valley or at least have kicked around the idea? No, I think they would, you know, they're wise businessmen and women. I'm sure they're looking into it. But is it going to, you know, is there a seller? That's the question. I don't know.
And so when was the sale of Steamboat final? When did we acquire that?
Just last week.
Right. And that's along with everything else, right? And that was what?
Yeah.
How much was the price tag on all of it?
If you include the debt, it was $1.5 billion for IntraWest and its six resorts.
And that doesn't include Mammoth.
Right? Yeah, Mammoth Resorts, which has four ski areas, was privately held, and that sales amount was not disclosed.
Okay.
KSL brought Squaw and Alpine into the mix, which it already owned.
You mentioned Snowmass, and this whole acquisition and partnering the ski company with East West Partners. There's a lot of moving parts to everything that's happening in the ski industry locally. And last month, there was the annual download for the upload or upload for the download, whatever it is, which is basically a State of the Union from the ski company and also the town of Snowmass Village as far as the resort goes about what's going on there. So they finally have broken ground. This new affiliate, the ski company and East West Partners and KSL. And so they're the ones that are now going to develop Base Village. So
Right. You've
got three buildings going up now?
Correct. Yeah, you've got the Limelight Hotel, which once it's completed, Aspen Skiing Company will be buying from the partnership that it is part of. So it'll be running that exclusively. Then you've got the Discovery Center that's underway. And then you've got a residential and a small residential commercial building.
And then the big boys that are currently the false front facing Wood Road are supposed to get started potentially this fall, but it sounds like they may have some hoops to jump through there to get those going.
You know, just on the acquisition thing and where Aspen Skiing Company fits with that in this bigger company.
Yes.
One thing that was interesting out of the Interwest was a publicly held company. Now, after this purchase has been completed, they're a privately held company. But when they were a publicly traded company, they had to file information with the SEC about what kind of offers they were receiving, because their shareholders have the right to know if their board was truly pursuing the best deal. So some interesting information came out of that. And Aspen Skiing Company, when it first became known that Interwest was shopping around its resorts, Aspen Skiing Company put in a cash bid, for Steamboat, the operations at Winter Park, and then the Heliski operation up in British Columbia. So that kind of tells us what Aspen Skiing Company or what the Crowns were specifically interested in.
Mm-hmm.
Interwest board rejected that deal because they wanted to sell the whole kit and caboodle. And so KSL Partners, Capital Partners, had that broader bid on the entire company. It was competing with some other big boys that I don't believe were disclosed. No, they were not. The other bidders weren't disclosed. But I think three parties advanced to the final round. Aspen Skiing Company was not one of those three parties. In the meantime, KSL teamed up. Somehow, KSL and Aspen Skiing Company came together. And so it's just interesting to me that the real apple in the eye of the Aspen Skiing Company was Steamboat Ski Area, and then Interwest had an operating agreement with Winter Park, which is owned by the city of Denver.
So it was like the ski company went to the table and they just wanted a few things, mm-hmm. a couple appetizers and maybe a side dish.
Mm-hmm. Heavy apps.
Right.
Yeah, right.
And they said, no, you're going to have to get the buffet.
Yes.
Right.
And so they're like, fine, we're hungry enough. And we have enough room in our stomachs to do it.
Yeah. You know, this KSL is becoming an interesting company in the ski business when you think about it, because they had Squaw Valley and Alpine Meadows already, and that's folded into this bigger company. They've got a big part of Snowmass Base Village, and now they've become a bigger player with the acquisition of Mammoth and Interwest. So, yeah, I mean, Aspen Skiing Company is bringing the know-how on how to run ski areas, but it appears that KSL is bringing the most money to the table.
Yeah.
And where are they going? Why do they want to get into this? What's advantageous to them of getting this immersed in the ski industry?
That was Scott Condon, reporter for the Aspen Times. And I'm Carolyn Sakriasen, host of Valley Roundup. We now continue our conversation with Randy Essex, editor and publisher of the Glenwood Post Independent, about Sunlight Ski Area's recent partnership with a Japanese ski resort. There's consolidation happening all over the ski industry, particularly what the Aspen Skiing Company is doing with Mammoth and Intrawest, and I guess this is Sunlight's little way of expanding its portfolio in that it allows more opportunity for pass holders, right?
It makes their passes more valuable and it gets their name out there. So in some ways, Sunlight is a local's favorite, and then it becomes kind of an alternative for people who are coming this way. The more buzz there is about it, the more people hear that, hey, the snow's really good there and it doesn't get worn down and you don't have to wait, which is why locals like it.
Right.
And I think that Troy Hawks, who's been their marketing manager for a couple full seasons now, has done a nice job of finding some ways to get this little ski area's name out.
So it looks like if you are a pass holder at Sunlight, you can also go ski the Alp 2500 and other resorts in this state, along with Wyoming, Idaho, Washington, and Alaska. So
yeah.
It's like the Sunlight's answer to the ski company's Mountain Collective slash kind of taking over the world of Western resorts, smaller ones.
That's right. Well, and Sunlight doesn't get the publicity. It doesn't have the name, so it has to do this sort of headline grabbing. And it's worked. I've seen all kinds of echoes to that news release and the story that we did with Denver TV stations and just Google alerts from ski industry websites and so forth picking it up.
Yeah.
So good for them.
Let's talk about some other headlines. You have a story early this week about the humans may be contributing to the uptick in bear pregnancies.
Yeah, I thought this was pretty interesting science. Bear mommies have delayed implantation so they can carry a fertilized egg with them, and whether it actually implants in the womb and they carry it to term is determined by how much food they get over the course of the summer before they hibernate. And the game people have figured out that with the easy access to human food, the natural birth control that comes during low seasons isn't kicking in. So we get more bears, and the moms have become acculturated to going and getting the easy pickings of garbage and human food as humans encroach on bear territory. So they bring their cubs into town, and we're creating this unvirtuous cycle of, more bears eating more human food. And it just heightens the need for people to be super mindful about, as we all know, about trying to keep food away from bears. But it also illustrates how whenever there's a bear census, there was one a couple of years ago, they found more bears than they expected, and there are fewer and fewer things that we can do about it, and it's not the bear's fault.
No, I was surprised to see that number that was reported in your story. That was it. 5 that have been euthanized.
Yeah.
So far this year.
In Glenwood, right?
Yeah.
And Glenwood Springs, last summer, there was a bear, I think it killed a dog, and it was just right off of Grand Avenue in a neighborhood running down the street. Clearly the habitat and the area that they're roaming for food that's easy to get is growing.
Yeah, and I think their population, too.
Right. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So that used to be a rarity to have
So I'm told. I mean, not unheard of, certainly. Glenwood Springs, there used to be a lot of fruit trees here, and, certainly bears would come and feed on the fruit.
Carbondale passed I don't know if they passed it or if they're considering it, a Environmental Bill of Rights. We reported on it, and you guys reported on it. What do you know about that?
They are still considering it, and it is not meant to have the force of law, but meant to be aspirational. I think there are 14 points. I asked if we could include all of those cryptically, and they're still at the point where it would be way too wordy to try to explain each of the 14 points. But it's things like you have a right to clean air, you have a right to clean water, you have a right to the clear night skies of the American West, which is a great thing, and things like we will promote alternative transportation. We will increase reuse and recycling, you know, all of these things. And the idea is that you come up with perhaps a poster that businesses that are part of the Chamber of Commerce post, that the government posts, that puts these issues top of mind. The town council, Frosty Marriott, is pushing this, and it's kind of a statement of it's urgent that we take what action that we can. Some of the councilors, including the mayor, are realistically saying we want to be sure that we're not promising that the city is going to ensure all of these things, because, you know, it can be very expensive to go too far with recycling when the logistics are difficult and the market is difficult.
And, yeah.
As a Carbondale resident, too, there's a certain contradiction here. You talk about wanting to promote alternative travel, and certainly a lot of people in Carbondale walk and get on their bikes to go around in the small town. But let's face facts that it's still a town surrounded by ranches, and, you know, half the traffic through town is big pickup trucks, sometimes with horse
diesel
trailers and so forth, that, you know, rumble through, and there are construction crews. So you can say that, but a big part of the economy and a big part of the lifestyle is contrary to that. And I think truly one of the neat things about Carbondale is that that coexists so well. So it's cute.
Yeah.
It's cute. I mean, maybe it's important too. I don't, you know, but it'll only go so far.
Yeah. I wonder, is it partly for the elected officials to be thinking about that when they're making policy decisions and making other, you know, voting on things like, okay, we have this Environmental Bill of Rights back here, and we should be thinking about them
mm-hmm.
as we're making decisions and policy. That's kind of
I think that's exactly the point, and it's meant to also speak to businesses, speak to visitors, just about these are the principles of this community.
So you have a new school opening up in the RE1 or 2 district?
RE1.
Okay.
Roaring Fork School District.
That's soon. They open soon, right?
Yep. The Roaring Fork schools are opening after Labor Day, they didn't want to open immediately after the bridge closed because they wanted CDOT and law enforcement and drivers to sort of figure out how that's going to be. And in Glenwood Springs, they have a whole bunch of logistical things that they're doing with buses to try to keep buses off of the detour route. So they're going to test those the second week of the detour. So the upshot of that is that the new school, it's a K-8 school right out by, it's about 5 miles south of Glenwood Springs on 82 by the FedEx terminal, is opening, and it's going to be dual language. There's been some controversy in the teacher hiring. There is a contingent of folks who are upset about the fact that it's going to be 50-50 Spanish-English, but you're going to come out of it kids with bilingual skills, which I have a hard time seeing how that's bad.
That was Randy Essex, editor of the Glenwood Post Independent, speaking on the phone. Thanks to him and my other guests this week, Scott Condon, reporter for the Aspen Times, and Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen, and you've been listening to Valley Roundup. You can get a rundown of links and more information on the stories covered on this show on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.